Hi, how are you? I'm Gabby. Welcome to the Happier Life Project, brought to you by the free award-winning mental health and wellness app, My Possible Self. This is our last episode before we take a short break over the Easter period, and I wanted to give you something really useful to tide you over the next few weeks, something that you can go back to and listen to again, full of practical, easy-to-do exercises for a universal topic that we all struggle with, finding calm. And who can blame us? In a world full of stress and stressors, we're almost hardwired now to constantly be in a state of fight, flight, or freeze, which is our body's stress response. And if we are continuously living in this stress response, hello, anxiety and various other mental health issues, not to mention physical and emotional problems as well. We can't change the world or the things that trigger us, but we can change how we react to difficult and stressful situations by practicing, because we do need to practice this, being calm. And by practicing calm, today's guest believes this is how we can access it in the chaos. Rebecca Baller is a counsellor, somatic and nervous system regulation coach, and an 8 times best-selling author and illustrator. She is the founder of the Instagram community at journey_to_wellness_ with over 460,000 followers. Bex also runs a fantastic membership program to support people in their journeys to embodied joyful lives through monthly workshops, somatic classes, guest experts, libraries of tools, yoga classes, and courses. Bex's mission is to make mental health and wellness accessible, science-backed but digestible, with no BS and a bit of fun. And her most recent book, 101 Ways to Find Calm, How to Use Your Body to Soothe Your Mind, is storming the books charts, proving just how much we want and need to live a more peaceful existence. So with that in mind, ready to find a healthier, happier, calmer you? Let's get started. Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. I'm a little tired. It's a bit late for me.
Oh, what time is it where you at?
Well, it's not super late. It's 9 p.m.
Oh, yeah, that's late to be working though.
It is a little late to be working, but I'm glad to be here and recording with you. So welcome, Rebecca Baller, to the Happier Life Project. I know already this is going to be a very, very popular episode because we're exploring calm, and I'm sure that's why the book is doing so well, 101 Ways to Find Calm, because we're all desperate for it, aren't we? But it's not so easy to find and to maintain. Is that what you found?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's funny because we had this kind of back and forth with my publishers about the title of the book, because whilst there is 101 ways to find calm in there, I have a view that it's not about always being calm. So I want people to kind of drop any expectations that it's going to be easy, or that we're going to get a couple of tools under our belt and just be happy and calm all the time. I think we've kind of realized now it's actually really normal and functional to have times of stress, have times when we're a bit flat. So the idea really is just about having a really solid toolkit of resources that you can use to help regulate you.
And something that you can practice daily, maybe not all 101 of them, but I like the phrase that you go back to, I think, a few times about practicing daily, but basically to access in the chaos. So it's getting yourself familiar with giving yourself that calm time, which, why is it so unfamiliar to us to allow ourselves a moment to just be present, sit with ourselves, keep calm, keep tranquil?
Yeah, I love that saying. I always say it, practice in the calm to access in the chaos. So all that means is Don't try to only find these tools and only integrate them into your life when things are really chaotic and really hectic. And because it's so hard to do that then, you know, our brains are already hijacked by our emotions, by feeling stressed and under threat. So it is important just to kind of start a practice that sets up these pathways in our brain, so we've got stuff to fall back on when we're stressed. But I'm feeling that too. Like, I'm hearing from so many people, there's just so much, I don't know, it's a bit of frazzled, and it's some people are in that stressed and anxious. A lot of people I'm talking to at the moment are more identifying with this kind of functional freeze state. And so if your listeners haven't heard of that, it's really mixed state of the nervous system where a part of us has got really high stress levels, there's high sympathetic activation. So there's cortisol and adrenaline. We've got to-do lists coming out of our ears. And there's just so much stimulation. Like we're being bombarded by information and sensory information everywhere we turn. And so you might be quite functioning in the day, like people are able to work and they're getting through, they're kind of plastering a smile on their face, and then you drive in your driveway at the end of the day and you just sit there in your car just staring at the garage door like, oh my god, I can't get out. Or you know, you have a shower and you sit in your towel and you just can't get dressed. And a lot of us are doom scrolling at night, you know, just stuck on social media, doom scrolling, watching Netflix and binging episode after episode, and then feeling shame, and then snacking on sweet and salty foods, and all these kind of stuck feelings that come in, and we just kind of can't seem to get ourselves going. So that's kind of this functional freeze state. And I think it's a combination of busy, busy lives, but also, we're overstimulated, and there's too much happening at once for us.
So we're like, the things we're doing, I suppose, to self-soothe, right? Like you mentioned about the snacking or the watching Netflix or the doom scrolling. We're doing that as a way to distract ourselves. And I guess we think we're doing something to like bring ourselves down from the stressful day. But what I'm hearing from you is actually that could be feeding back into this sort of cycle. I mean, I also was thinking when you were talking about how so many people, being busy is like a badge of honor, but it's also something that it's like you're not performing as, you know, a proper adult if you're not constantly busy all the time.
Oh, 100%. I think we have like a full generational spread of people who have that kind of narrative. And even though maybe cognitively we can say to ourselves, okay, hang on, you know, my worth isn't determined by productivity or how many hours I work. You know, maybe some of us have got to that point of cognitively we know it, but there's these unconscious layers. And so when we're trying to rest or when we're not doing something, there's this sense of guilt. And that's where the freeze state comes in, because it's kind of like a forced stuckness and a forced doing nothing, but it doesn't feel good. So you don't feel recharged at the end of it, and you probably feel guilty and gross even during it. And that's kind of, some of us are mistaking our tiredness for that, you know, a tiredness that we all feel. Is it tiredness or is it actually freeze? You know, is it the nervous system saying, hold on, this is a bit much, like there's been too much stress for too long, or you've got trauma in your past that you haven't dealt with. And so we're overloaded, and that's where the freeze comes from. And I mean, I can identify this with myself. Like, I'll try to relax at night sometimes and I think, oh, I should or could be maybe doing some emails now or doing something. And so even when you're trying to rest, there's this racing feeling, like a tired but wired sort of thing going on. And it's all of it. All of it is just little red flags, you know, from the nervous system trying to communicate to you, hey, this isn't quite right. We're feeling threatened. We want to be regulated. And a lot of us just don't have the tools to do that.
Yeah. One other point I would just like to make is that, like, sometimes my work does overspill into the weekend, depending on what my schedule looks like. And it's been happening quite a lot recently where I've just been craving and craving a weekend where I'm like, I just want a couple of days to myself. And then I got one the other weekend. And then I was like, and it just so happened, like, friends are out of town and stuff. So I was on my own for the whole weekend. And I was like, I hate this. What am I going to do? I'm bored. Like, and I was in this very much, I'd like, I didn't everything I'd been wanting, I was like, well, I don't know what to do with myself now. And it was like this feeling, you know, all weekend, where I was like, this is what you've been craving for so long. And now it's here and you don't know how to chill. Yeah.
We become really addicted to stress, though. And then, you know, your nervous system is so used to being on alert and kind of active and what's the next thing I've got to do, that when we're then faced with stillness, we can't do it. And it actually feels really threatening. If you're in a sympathetic state, so that's, you know, your fight or your flight, when you're in that place and you try to be still, this is why meditation doesn't work for so many people, it feels awful and it feels really threatening and we get really racy. And it's kind of doing the opposite of what your nervous system wants, which is to run or to fight. And so that's why so many people, when they have a holiday or they have a finally, like you had a weekend, finally some time to rest, and it just feels chaotic and you're like, I don't feel comfortable in this. And we're used to the stimulation.
Yeah, it's like you're malfunctioning. I was like, can't compute. What am I supposed to do? Anyway, I've got obviously more to ask you as we go on, but like you very kindly agreed to share 10 of your favorite calming strategies from the book. What's brilliant about the book as well is, because obviously I've read it, they're all free. They're all, you know, very simple to do. You can pick and choose which ones. Some are maybe might be more beneficial than others in terms of in what state you're in, whether it's anxious or stressed or whatever. Yeah, and there's 101 of them, which is great. I also think it would make a really good present to pass on to, because again, everybody could do with some strategies on how to get yourself feeling calmer. But also I thought it was really great for kids too. Just because kids are stressed as well, not just adults. So it's definitely for all. So yeah, I guess we might as well jump in then with sharing one of your faves off the get-go.
Okay, let's do it. So I do have my list of 10. Okay. And the first one is bilateral stimulation. And so there's lots of different ways we can do it, but it's super, super handy. And it's also can be done quite subtly. So you could sit at home and do this and really kind of make this quite meditative, or you could do this in your car and stuck in traffic, or you could do this in a meeting at work when you're starting to get riled up. And so bilateral stimulation is a technique that comes from EMDR, which is a trauma processing sort of modality. And really all it is working with stimulating two sides of the body and to stimulate both hemispheres of the brain. So it kind of centers us and grounds us, but it also helps to process emotions and things that are coming up at the time. And so the classic one that a lot of people know is just the butterfly hug. So, you know, crossing your arms over your chest and alternately tapping your hand against your shoulder, nice, slow heartbeat rhythm, breathing deeply as you go and just feeling into that sort of stimulation of touch. And then again, if you're in public and you're thinking, I can't sit there in a meeting tapping my shoulders, everyone's going to see, you can tap your thighs underneath the table, one back and forward. You can tap your feet back and forward. You can put your hands behind your back, cross your wrists over and tap your fingers. You can pass an object back and forward and just look at it with your eyes going back and back, left and right. So it's just engaging the brain and it's very grounding. So that's my first one.
How long would you say to do it for?
So a lot of people ask these questions, like they want prescription, you know, around exactly how long something is. What I encourage people to do with everything is to do like a check-in beforehand, feel how it's feeling during and checking in afterwards. And so it might be that you do it for 30 seconds, or it might be that you sit there and do it for 5 minutes and pair it with some beautiful breathing. And then as you go, you're just sort of asking yourself, like, how's this feeling in my body? Like, what's the emotion here? And is it changing as I go? Is this upregulating or is it downregulating? Am I feeling calmer or is this hyping me up? And just kind of tuning in and checking as you go.
Okay. When I was watching you do it, I was actually starting to go with the, because it's about the rhythm, isn't it? I think, and I guess that's why it's effective to rock a baby. It must be the same kind of thing. Okay, moving on to something else I wanted to talk to you about, which I'd never really thought about it in terms of finding calm, but it makes all of the sense. And it was something that you went back to in the book as well. It's about recognizing and sitting with your emotions. And I think many people like myself might think that's the opposite of calming, because we do so much to try and avoid and distract, you know, going inwards. So how does that help us relax?
I know many of us are just masters at like numbing, ignoring, dissociating, all of that. But so it might not be relaxing in the sitting with an emotion. It might not feel good at the time. But what we're looking at is kind of the long-term results of mindfulness and non-judgment and allowing space for emotions. Because when we don't, when we push them away and when we ignore them, it doesn't mean that they go away. It just means they get stuck. They get stuck in the body. And then as a result, often, either we get stuck in these patterns of threat responses coming up. So it's like reflexively, I'm angry or I'm anxious or I'm people pleasing or I'm shutting down. It just keeps showing up. I'm doing this at work. I'm doing this with my partner. You know, we just get in these loops. And that happens when we don't carve out time to get to know our nervous systems and to be with our emotions. And then the other result of the constantly kind of pushing away of the emotions is that we form this disconnect between body and mind. And so we actually lose touch. We might dissociate. So we might ignore signals from the body. We might lose intuition, you know, that sense of really trusting in how we feel internally. And so, yeah, sitting with an emotion, people do not need to go and sit and wallow for half an hour if this is new to you. It might be just that anxiety comes up, say, and instead of going, oh my gosh, here we go again, I hate this, how do I make this stop? How do I get out of this? We simply just sit and acknowledge it. Where is this in my body? Where do I feel this? Where's that showing up? How big is it? What color is it? Breathing into it. Maybe we say, it's okay that you're here. It makes sense that you're here. You know, you've protected me in the past and now you're showing up again. We might name it. We might name sensations. And if that's super uncomfortable, you might only do that for a minute, 30 seconds, 5 minutes. And then you might do a calming tool that helps you kind of shift back into your body and shift back into calm. But as a result, we're digesting the emotion. So it doesn't keep patterning itself into our life. It gets dealt with. And that's where the calm comes from in the long term.
Oh, wow. So is there on your list one that you could suggest for, you know, if we're digesting anxiety, say, and I know certainly with our app users, because we've done a lot of polls and stuff, anxiety is something, unsurprisingly, that I would say most struggle with, if not all.
Yeah. And that's been my history too. You know, I've had a lifetime of anxiety. I had panic attacks. And the missing piece of the puzzle for me in my journey with that, because I'd done so much cognitive work and trying to restructure thoughts and things, the missing pieces, there were two things. One was my resistance. So it was, as soon as anxiety came up, I was going into, oh, you know, this again, I hate this and I don't want to feel this in my body. And it was my resistance to it that was actually saying and signaling fear, like this is bad, I want to get rid of this, signals fear to the body. So it creates this massive loop that we get stuck in. So one was the coming into welcoming it and sitting with it, which is easier said than done, I understand. And the second thing that I had to do was the somatic work, the stuff that's in this book, you know, the body-based nervous system work. So in terms of how do we process, you know, emotions, anxiety, almost every tool in the book works, but there are some specific processing tools. It's hard to describe it, and I'll try to do that really briefly. You've got to kind of feel this. But one thing that you can do is if you're ruminating on a situation or a worry or something, you sit down and you press play on it like it was a VCR and you're watching a movie. you go through, you replay the memory or the event or the worries and let yourself totally feel into that. And you might do that for about a minute. And then you press pause and you stand up and you start to move about your space and you start to touch things and you're breathing and you're observing all of the things, like all the colors, all the textures moving, touching different fabrics, different objects. Yes, you look really weird. You look like you've just taken drugs or something. So you kind of want to do this on your own. But you do this like total, like mindful immersion into your space. Do that for about a minute and you come back, you sit down, you go straight back into the thought or the memory or the thing that you're trying to process.
Yeah.
And you feel back into that for another minute or two. Then you go back out again and you do your mindful thing. So you're sort of swinging like a pendulum between states of focus, being totally immersed in the thing and then totally immersed in the sensory environment. And most people that I've done, I say 99.9% of people who I guide through this exercise when we do it in our membership, experience this total shift in the emotion or in the thing that they're feeling. It's like, I don't need to go back into it. It feels like it processes. All the weight comes out of it. So they go back in, but it feels like they're kind of done with it or they're bored with it or there's a detachment from it.
Wow.
And then as they come out, they're just immersing and it's like, this really beautiful experience of being in your environment in a really safe way. So I do guide people on how to do that in my programs and things if it feels too kind of hard to guide yourself through it. But that is a powerful tool to pendulate between two states to process something.
Wow, I've never heard of that before. That's so interesting. So you allow yourself to let the loop continue and then you take yourself out and then you do it as many times as you feel you need to, and it loses its power.
That's it, yeah. And it just teaches you this, I have the ability to be with something tricky and to be present and to resource myself back into safety. And then when you swing back and forward, it's like strengthening a muscle, you know? So you've got this ability in your life to have this dual focus. So I can be with my anxiety and I can be present. And yeah, it's a beautiful kind of immersive practice to build that.
So does that then help when anxiety pops up, but say you're in work and you can't stop and practice that technique? Is it kind of like you said about building a muscle? Is it then noticing when it does come in, but being able to continue doing whatever you've got to continue doing?
Yeah, I often, when it pops up for me, I might just say, oh, hello, anxiety. You know, okay, you've come to visit and fine, that's fine. But you're not going to take the driver's seat. So you can be here. I don't need to judge you. I don't need to get rid of you. But we're going to carry on what we're doing. Or I might even say, okay, I'm going to pause and do, you know, something that's regulating, like a little practice out of the book. Things down a little bit. But I'm not doing everything with the intention of getting rid of emotions all the time. Because so long as we keep trying to check back in, is it gone? We're actually going to spur it to come back. We're triggering it by the very act of the resistance triggers it back in. Wow. So we can greet anxiety. Hello, I see you. You're protective. You're reflexive. Here we go again. That's okay.
Yeah.
Do something to calm myself, but I'm going to be present. I can still stay here. I am safe in this moment, despite that you're here and you're telling me I'm not safe. I am. This is okay.
Going back to a sentence in the book, actually, it might be more in the synopsis I read, and it's just piggybacking off what you were saying about how to safely feel and process your emotions, how to rewire your brain and nervous system, and how to deeply connect with yourself. So this deep connection back to us, again, wouldn't put that with techniques on being calm. You know, it's like, it's very deep, I guess, is what I'm getting at, but that's what we need to do, because maybe the surface stuff like you touched on before, doing meditation or whatever, putting something on, you know, like a podcast or whatever, you're in too much of a highly strung state. For me anyway, it can be like, it can irritate me actually if I'm you know, I'll try and put something on to soothe and I'm just like, oh, shut up. It's not working.
Yeah. One of the things we need to do as well is, this is why we want to kind of come back into embodiment and into connection, is because when you can read your own state, like when you can feel your own feelings, feel somatic sensations, and you know what nervous system state you're in, as in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, or, you know, calm and ventral vagal. When you can read that, then you actually know how to match a tool to the state. So I think a lot of us, we just do this sort of blanket, like plaster approach of, oh, things are a bit ugh in my life, I'm just going to meditate, or oh, I'll just do this breathing technique, I'm so angry, I'm going to do 10 breaths or something. And it's not to say that can't be useful, it might be. But when we can come into this embodiment, like knowing ourselves deeply, knowing our state, then you match it with a tool that actually works for that state. And so lots of people say when you're anxious or angry, we just try to calm ourselves straight away.
Yeah.
Rather than doing something that actually works with the energy of anxiety and anger. Because anxiety and anger are trying to keep you safe, right? They're not actually trying to ruin your life. They're really protective. It's a part of you that's saying, something doesn't feel safe to me, and I need to stress or be scared or run or to feel, you know, in a fight mode about it. And so then when we try to cap that with 10 deep breaths and sit still, that's like the opposite of what the body's trying to get us to do.
Yeah.
And that's why when we come into emotional processing and embodiment and stuff, we can stop that coming up for no reason. Because some of us are in patterns of anxiety or anger or people pleasing when it doesn't serve us anymore. It used to, but we're stuck in it. And so when we can kind of let that response actually process in the way it wants to, it's so much more helpful. Like, you know, for anger, it's okay if you need to, you know, stomp on the ground and throw a pillow over and over again and tear up paper and throw ice cubes at a brick wall, or, you know, allow that energy, that adrenaline to do what it wants. It's trying to get you to feel protected and set a boundary and do all these things. So hear the message of what it's trying to do, let it kind of get it out in a way that's helpful, and then you can use your calming tools. But that's the beauty of getting to know ourselves so well, is knowing how to match a tool.
Yeah, definitely. Because we've got quite a few to get through, I guess we should go into another exercise.
So, okay, one of my favorites, and this is just throwing in a completely different type of thing in the mixer, is my little low stimulation sensory shower. So I'm like an HSP, a highly sensitive person. A lot of people are, you know, empaths as well. We just sort of feel other people's energy. And also you tend to get sensory overload. So you might either be quite sensory avoidant. You know, you don't want to be climbed on or touched, or the extractor fans just driving you nuts. And some of us seek out sensations. We pick nails, skin on the lips, hair, we sway, we do things like that. So my little sensory shower is something that I do probably a few times a week. And I have a shower in the evening. And what will usually happen is I'll have a shower, the lights are on, my brain's going the whole time in the shower. I forget whether I've washed myself, so I've washed myself again.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of all these things while I'm in there. And so I take this as an opportunity to do something different. And instead of having the light on, I have my little soft light on in the bedroom. And so it's just slightly lit up in the ensuite, like the lowest light. And then I have the temperature of the shower just right. I turn the pressure down, and then I experience it with senses for a little while. So as I'm washing, what can I smell? What are the things I can feel? And I really tune in. Like, I can feel a drip of water running down my hamstring. I can feel the different texture of the cloth that I'm using. You know, I can feel the bubbles bursting, and we just kind of, what can I hear? All of those things take even just a few minutes, but that's how I kind of bookend my day. If it's been a high sensory day and I'm overloaded, I bookend it with this kind of complete dimming and turning inwards shower. So that's one tool people could put at the end of their day really easily.
Yeah, I'd imagine that helps with sleep as well.
Yeah, so nice.
Completing the stress response. I thought this was really interesting. If you've been holding onto, you know, anger or jealousy, resentment, anxiety, I've studied yoga, so I know a lot about, not loads, but I know enough about how energy gets stored in the body. And you mentioned about sort of symptoms that can pop up. What kind of symptoms are we talking about where it could be the fact that we've not completed the stress response?
Yeah.
Why we struggle to calm ourselves down?
Yes. So we might have physical symptoms of like stuck emotions or trauma, and they can be things like digestive issues. So if there's like a lot of bloating, if we have kind of chronic headaches with no explanation, if we have sore, you know, shoulders and back and tight hips, again, with like no medical explanation, it just keeps coming up. A lot of people get these kind of tight throats or lump in the throat. And we might have brain fog, we might have fatigue, we might have a puffy face, you might get a twitch in the eye. So we have all these sort of physical things that they can be symptoms of this. The reason is because we've probably had elevated cortisol levels that haven't been dealt with. We probably also have had muscle tension. When we go into fight flight, muscles activate, but then if we're chronically stressed or we've had trauma and we're in these patterns, the muscles are always armoring. And so we get a lot of breathing issues, like, you know, we're shallow chest breathing. So those are some of the physical things someone might notice. And then we also have all these kind of behavioral symptoms that you often don't realize are anything to do with a stuck emotion. But it's sort of like I mentioned before, it can be the doom scrolling. It can be the craving salty and sweet food and you emotionally eat. It can be that you are on all day, but you're canceling plans on the weekend and you can't bear to, you know, show up and be social. It could be that you're always saying yes to things and you're feeling burnt out and resentful because of it. So there's lots of just behavioral patterns that we end up just saying, it's just my personality. Where actually often it's a symptom or it's a sign of something like a stress response in the body. Just, and I say the word reflexively a lot because you're not choosing it. You know, you're not choosing to be a people pleaser. You know, people pleasing's been a big one for me in my life. And this happened to me again recently. I went and had a massage and the woman said, just let me know how the pressure is as we go. And so she started and it was lovely. And then she started working into these parts of pain in my shoulders. And I just went silent and it was really hurting and I wasn't enjoying the massage at all. And I kept saying to myself in my head, say something, but I didn't. And it's just like, what are we, it's just this old pattern of, I can't say something to make her feel uncomfortable, like she's not doing a good job. So I'll just comfort. So it's interesting, just we see these kind of things, these little behaviors, these little things that we do. And so the reflexiveness about it is it's not a conscious choice. It just sort of takes over. And we can then recognize it and do something differently with it. Looking out for these little signs that there's some stuff going on there.
I think sometimes maybe people want to avoid an argument. That could be a partner. That could be a family member. That could be a boss, where it's like you might, I don't want to say the word know they're wrong, but you might sincerely believe they're wrong, but you know they're not going to back down. So you think, oh, I'm not, I'm just going to let it go because I don't want to get into an argument about it because nobody's going to back down on this. But then I guess you are holding on to that if it's irritated you or it's angered you. So then in terms of completing the stress response, and maybe it's not verbalizing it, there's things we can do somatically.
Yeah, especially with anxiety and anger. So when it's like a sympathetic response that we've had, which is we're going to have cortisol, we're going to have adrenaline, we can do things to complete that. So anxiety probably wants us to, you know, run away, but we might take ourselves off for a walk. We might shake the body, you know, shake out the limbs and let the hands shake and jiggle and kind of just let some of that energy come through rather than trying to come into being still and shutting it down. Same with anger, the things I mentioned before, the pillow throws, the whatever. With our people pleasing, it's a super, super mixed nervous system response. So there's some sympathetic, as in there's some stress that comes with that, some level of feeling threatened. Mm-hmm. But there's also some dorsal vagal, which is our freeze or our shutdown, which is we're shutting down our own needs, voice, wants, boundaries, intuition, all of that. And so we, with people pleasing, it's a really good, I work on that sort of cognitively and somatically. So we're working on people's stuck limiting beliefs and narratives. Often it's even really subtle things that we think are good qualities. We might say to ourselves, oh, I'm the peacekeeper in the family, or I'm just easygoing. Or yeah, like you said before, I'm not into conflict. We frame it as it's conflict to set a boundary, you know? Mm. So part of it is working on some of our limiting beliefs, and people pleasing is often really ingrained. We've often done that for maybe since we were children, you know, so we've got a lot to kind of unpick when it comes to what we believe to be true. And then somatically, I teach people how to work with what does a boundary feel like? Like, what does a yes and a no actually feel like somatically in your body? And there's exercises we can do to find that. And then I teach drills as well that help people to come back into a regulated state, and that work to activate through their throat and their vocal cords and their posture and all the things that change when we are people pleasing. So it's super layered when we work with all these responses, and people pleasing is like kind of a favorite to work with, because it's so many of us do it, and it's certainly possible to stop doing it.
Mm. Okay, so if we go into another one of your favorite exercises in the book, and I guess if we can kind of link it into, we were just talking about like completing the stress response, is there anything that jumps out?
So something that's lovely is this vagus nerve exercise, and what it does is it helps to bring you back into what we call ventral vagal. So that is your parasympathetic branch, rest, digest, and restore. So this helps people to kind of reset, which is super helpful if you want to set a boundary, or you know, you're trying to just calm some anxiety. Yeah. So it's a vagus nerve is, just so people know, it's 10th cranial nerve, wanders from the base of the brain, innervates through the ears, down the throat, diaphragm, lungs, heart. It's into our digestive system and basically makes up the majority of the nerves in our parasympathetic nervous system. So that's our sort of bringing everything back down state. It's like a foot brake to bring our heart rate down and our breathing down. So we can activate it directly with a whole heap of different methods. There's heaps in the book. And one of them is, it's so simple. You just tip your head off to one side. So you bring your left ear toward your left shoulder, and then you bring your gaze up so that your eyes are looking up into the far right. And you hang out there for 30 to 60 seconds. And then you come back and you do the other sides. So you tip over to the right, gaze up to the left. And what people often experience is a sign of parasympathetic activation, which is a yawn or a deep sigh or more saliva, like a big swallow, or tummy gurgles, or just a sense of settling. And I encourage people when they're doing that just to really let go of any gripping, let go of the belly, really breathe deeply. Don't overstrain your eyes and make yourself feel dizzy. Just come to where's comfortable. But this is a reset that I do for myself quite often, and a lot of the people in my membership use this as just tool in the back pocket, pull it out a couple times a day. Some people love it and it works really well. Most people, some people, it makes them a bit dizzy. So you get the odd person who's kind of got that vestibular dizziness. Yeah, so just be careful with the eyes when you do it. But that's my super simple 1 minute, 2 minute practice that I would do.
Okay, love that. I found this article and I'll kind of blitz through it, but I'm really curious to get your thoughts on it. It was something I found, 5 reasons that your brain won't let you relax. I'll just share them as quick as I can. Your brain wants a dopamine rush, So they said some people with low levels of the neurotransmitter dopamine, which is commonly seen in people with ADD and ADHD, tends to be excitement seeking and conflict driven. So for these people, relaxing is just another word for boring. Big thrills, whether they come from bungee jumping, taking a spontaneous road trip, or even having an argument, boost dopamine in the brain. And then they suggested, as like a tip, because they do, you know, like a relaxation strategy for these types of people, they said you can increase the neurotransmitter naturally by eating a higher protein, lower carbohydrate diet and taking nutritional supplements like green tea and ginseng.
Amazing. Mm. Yeah, I call this like dopamine chasing. And it definitely is especially true with the ADHD kind of brain that loves it. Yeah. But I think a lot of us are now in a real dopamine chasing pattern. And I hate to say it, because obviously Instagram is kind of how my business came to be. But Instagram is a real problem when it comes like that type of, so, you know, let's not demonize Instagram. It's actually an amazing place if you use it right. But many of us are in these patterns of seeking online shopping, quick thrills, adding stuff to our cart, getting online deliveries, doom scrolling, watching Netflix. That's all that, the food stuff again, all of that's dopamine hits. Mm-hmm. And because our brain loves it, like absolutely loves that sense of reward, it does get quite addictive, and so we chase it. And that's why a lot of us sort of, we're sitting there and we might be a bit bored, or an ad comes on TV and we find ourselves just reaching straight for the phone. Or you can't just sit in stillness and in boredom. Mm. You can imagine it's especially hard for ADHD. And so whilst it, you know, it's okay to do things that give us a sense of reward, and, you know, dopamine's a great thing, it can be really good to have a detox from it as well. And that can be as simple as, you know, completely limiting screen time for a little while and just detoxing the brain a bit, you know, resetting our dopamine levels. And, you know, mindfulness and kind of coming into presence is super beneficial when it comes to this. But I know that it's hard, but it's not about having a blank mind or just sitting in stillness. Mm. We can do those things with movement and with all of that, but it's just trying to, we've got to reset some of their dopamine levels, I think.
Yeah, well, so going into another tip from your book, like for the Instagram junkies, which is most of us, or other social media platforms are, of course, available. When we are reaching for that phone to get that dopamine hit, is there an exercise that you would recommend us do to calm us down, bring us into a zen space so that we don't need that hit?
I mean, I have a whole masterclass on habit hacking when it comes to more like the cognitive breaking these neural pathways and breaking these habits. Yeah. But I would just, rather than try to necessarily do an exercise, which absolutely you can do, like pick a favorite exercise in the book, turn to any page, do something gorgeous, or more so approach it from this kind of embodiment, just checking in with myself here. So if you notice you're reaching for the phone, you might just stop from pause for a second and say, why am I reaching for it? You know, what's motivated that? Is it habit? Is it boredom? Is there an emotion that I'm feeling or a sensation in my body that I'm feeling that I'm trying to turn away from, that I'm trying to numb, that I'm trying to distract from? And sometimes, and often that's just boredom. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that is more of an anxiety rushing thing. So we're trying to give ourselves something to do that's distracting. So it might be just coming into self. What is it I'm feeling in my body that's driven me to do that? What's this response? And then you might still do it. And then could you do that intentionally? How is this feeling in my body as I'm doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, am I just hunching inward and feeling quite deflated, and or is this making me feel like comparison and everyone else's lives are, look at all the things they're doing and I'm not? Or is this making me feel anxious? So kind of noticing the effect of what that is on the system. And I think if we can just do things a bit more intentionally so that it's not so much autopilot, we're kind of mindfully having the experience. Mm-hmm. It gives that feedback of, is this something I want to do, or is this good for me? And then if it's not, Okay, I'm going to start doing the work of kind of breaking down this habit a little bit. And there's lots of tips and tricks that we can use to kind of break habits. Right. Some of them are in the book and others I, you know, talk in my membership and things like that.
Yeah.
So some people just simply cleanse out their social media. They delete it on certain days of the week. They move it to a different folder in their phone, you know, just all these little things that just disrupt that really reflexive pathway enough that it becomes a really intentional thing to have to get on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going, is this serving me? Is this good for me right now? Or is there another way I could meet this need, but not doing an unhealthy coping strategy?
Yeah. You've got an exercise in the book. Is it called the self-check-in, which sounds very similar to what you're describing now. And again, it's about that going inwards, isn't it? When we're trying to like avoid or soothe or whatever it is. Okay, going back to this article about five reasons why your brain won't let you relax. Your emotional brain is overactive. I could relate to this one. When the brain's emotional centers and fear centers are overactive, it can be associated with depression and anxiety. If you have this common brain pattern, you may stay busy as a way to distract yourself from your anxious thoughts and feelings of hopelessness. When the world calms down around you, it's like those worries and depressed moods come into sharper focus, is what they think. And then again, they recommend supplements like saffron, omega-3, fatty acids, and GABA to help calm the emotional and fear centers. And they said bright light therapy and the scent of lavender may also help as well.
I think it's amazing to take a holistic approach. So, yep, we want to look at supplements. We want to maybe check our bloods. We want to look at our gut health, because if we miss all that, we could be missing a piece of the puzzle. We also want to look at cognitive stuff. You know, we want to look at our beliefs and our thinking patterns and unhelpful thinking styles and all of that and our behaviors that might be feeding into it. And we want to look at somatics and our nervous system. And that could immediately feel really overwhelming. People are like, oh my God, how much do I have to change all in one? You don't. Mm. But just consider there's these kind of different holistic approaches. What's a couple of things I could do differently realistically for me? Mm. And so if one of them is we don't do it because our emotional brain is overactive, yeah, supplements are going to be great, right? But if you continue to suppress emotions or lead that mega stressful life or hold those beliefs that you have, it isn't going to be enough, right? Yeah. You can't just take a supplement and you're sorted. It's just not how it works, unfortunately. So
yeah. Good point.
Yeah, we need to kind of do that really holistic approach.
Mm. The third one they say is your sympathetic nervous system is stuck in overdrive. Our sympathetic nervous system is the fight or flight response that makes us feel anxious and afraid. Our parasympathetic nervous system is a relaxation response that counterbalances the SNS and helps us calm down after a heart pounding incident. When the nervous system is healthy, they work in concert to help us manage stress. Chronic stress or prolonged trauma, however, can interfere with the body's relaxation mechanism. When trauma is severe or prolonged, it leads to post-traumatic stress disorder. The SNS can get stuck on, making you feel restless, anxious, panicky, hyper-aroused, hyper-vigilant, or sleepless. If this is the case, even when you try to relax, you aren't able to shake off those feelings.
Mm. So many people live life outside their window of tolerance, which just means we're either in a high sympathetic state, we're kind of stuck in a sympathetic dominant state, which is very fatiguing to the body because, you know, when we're in that place, right, the brain is sending a signal and the body is sending a signal that we're in danger. And so we got high cortisol and adrenaline, and it's really fatiguing, and we get inflammation and all that stuff happens as a result. And some of us sit outside our window of tolerance down the other end of the spectrum, and we're sort of stuck in dorsal vagal, which is actually in the parasympathetic branch. So parasympathetic isn't all rest, digest, and calm. It has two branches, ventral vagal, which is the calm connected, and dorsal vagal, which is the freeze or the shutdown. And that's where people would be stuck feeling a lot of depression or low mood or stuckness, no motivation, shame. all of those things. And some people find that they fluctuate between the two. So they might be really, really stressed for a period of time and then find they just totally slump into not being able to get going. You just don't want to get out of bed, just too tired. And then maybe life ramps up again and they find themselves anxious again. You know, so it's so nuanced, and the article is right. You know, we absolutely can live a life outside of this tolerance window, stuck in these patterns. It's not doom and gloom because we can regulate this. You know, it doesn't mean just because maybe there's been trauma, things are stuck, that they're stuck forever or that you're doomed. You know, our nervous system is completely capable of change, and so is the brain. So it's just holding the hope for that and just small steps to come, you know, building that capacity, building that resilience back.
Is that like the exercise that you referred to before, you know, about like playing the loop and then going and touching the objects and being very mindful? Is it exercises like that? Or when it's something like this, is it more seeking professional help, do you think?
I think, I mean, exercises like that are great for working with emotions. I think you can do a lot of stuff on your own if that feels tolerable and okay. But I always think, you know, we're relational creatures, you know, and we heal in relationship and in connection as well. And, you know, I have an online membership and community where people have coaching and they do courses and they work with me.
Yeah.
And some of those people do that and that's all they need. Some people do that and do therapy, and some people really just need to do that one-on-one, you know, someone walks alongside you in the journey. And that might be especially true if you're kind of realizing, you know what, there is a lot of trauma in my past and I do want to work through this. It's beautiful to do that with the guidance of someone who is trauma trained and probably also works with some kind of somatic, you know, which most people do when it comes to trying to work with trauma, we're having to work with the nervous system and, you know, somatically, right? So that can be really beneficial to work with someone when you're in that place.
Yeah, because how can you relax if your, you know, brain is, if you've experienced trauma and it's trying to keep you safe, right? The fourth one is super, I can just say the bullet point, you stress about relaxation. So when you're putting it on the to-do list, it just adds basically to the feelings of anxiety, especially if you, you know, you can't get there easily.
Yeah. I think that's so true. And when you are really quite overwhelmed, it feels too much.
Yeah.
It's too hard. How do I possibly add something else into my day? I can't. It all just feels really overwhelming.
Yeah, especially if it's like the opposite of if you've been super crazy busy and then you're supposed to be still or give yourself a massage or something. It's like it's two opposites, isn't it?
Yeah. That's exactly what I was talking about with like matching your tool. You know, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
And if you've been too stressed or you're too anxious, I think I really encourage people to know that. When it comes to starting out and doing this work, if you are overwhelmed, it's totally fine that it's bite-sized. You know, these practices can be tiny. And most of the ones in this book are achievable in under a couple of minutes, under 5 minutes. There's a few that you'd want to take some time with, but it's about finding things that feel realistic. And you might also say, well, you know, what's it going to do if I do 2 minutes here and there? It's a drop in the ocean. But what it is giving your body and your nervous system these micro moments throughout the day of having a felt sense of safety or giving feedback of saying, it's okay, I hear you and I've got you and here's just a moment for you. And the more we can weave that in, the more it starts having these ripples. And addressing stress sometimes means adding in. So adding in the tools and the bite-sized things, we definitely want to add in. But it also does sometimes mean, what are you taking out? So sometimes it's the hard thing of, I have to stop doing something. I've got to delegate. I've got to bring in support. I've got to stop this activity. I've got to, you know what, I can't make dinner tonight. We're doing takeaway, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
What are you taking out as well as what are you putting in?
Yeah. The last one on number five of these points was you fuel your brain with distressing news, kind of ish like we were talking about with social media, I guess, but it's I mean, in this case, they're talking more about watching or reading the news, and your brain is basically on a steady diet of disturbing information, as they put it. So it's very hard to relax when you're sort of constantly on the edge and your brain is seeking out the next impending disaster around the corner.
We have to remember, like, effectively, we are working with caveman software when it comes to our threat responses.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the body, when it reads an article of something or it watches something horrific on the news, the brain doesn't know, oh, this is not happening to me, or this isn't happening around the corner, or it's going to react in ways that as if it's seen a tiger in our caveman days. So I totally don't watch the news. And I know that in some ways that's probably not great. I should be keeping up more, but actually I know my nervous system doesn't take it well. I get enough information from where I need to, but it's not helpful to me to be watching those things all the time. And I remember after I had my daughter, when I think my nervous system was quite dysregulated, I could no longer watch horror movies. You know, I couldn't tolerate anything like that. So we do have to be really mindful of that. And also just even not necessarily bad news, but just the amount of information and sensory input. It's not kind of, we're not designed for the world we live in now, where we can feel something in our body and Google the symptoms and find out all the different types of diseases and cancers it could be. You know, we have too much information at our fingertips. For a lot of us, it's, well, we just have to put a bit of a perspex boundary around ourselves and block out some of that overload.
Absolutely. Bex, I'm really like conscious of time, so I think maybe this needs to be your top five. I guess before we start to wrap things up, if you could share another tip from the book.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to combine four of them in one.
Okay.
For you, so that you can get, your audience can get a few in one. Okay, all right, one. Okay. Rule number 96 is called the boiling breather, right? So what it is when you boil your jug to make a cup of tea, which I think most of us do a few times a day. Mm-hmm. When we do that, usually we rush off. We go to rush off to check our emails, to scroll, to do something. We don't just, you know, do nothing in that time. So what you do is you habit stack. This is a great way to put some bite-sized tools in. Every time you boil the jug, you either do a boiling breather. So you do a breath practice for the whole time it boils. Or I'll give you like a few other tools that you could do in that time. One is a containment hug. So you tuck one hand under your armpit, wrap the other over your upper arm, come into breath. Maybe you sway and you listen to the jug boiling. That's it. Maybe you do safe place till number 27. So the jug is boiling and you're visualizing in your mind a place that's safe to you. Maybe it's by a roaring fire. Maybe it's by a stream. You're coming into all the details. You're visiting that place. Or you do till number 84, which is anchor. So as the jug boils, you anchor yourself. This is especially good if you're anxious or you've had a trauma trigger, that use this anchor tool. So you might say, okay, Bex, it is March 2024. You know, we're not in the year 2000 anymore. I am here in this moment. I'm in my kitchen. I'm listening to the jug boil. You say, I can feel, what can you feel? Your feet on the ground. You can feel your necklace on your neck. I can hear the jug boiling. I can hear my breath. I am safe here in this moment. Maybe one hand's on the heart, one's on the belly. You come back into breath. The jug finishes boiling. You have your cup of tea. Bonus tool, you make it a mindful cup of tea. And then in that moment of boiling your jug, you've locked in like 4 minutes of beautiful nervous system regulation. So it can be done in these times, when you're on the loo, when you're washing your hands, when you're boiling the jug, make it work for you.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. I have to squeeze in as well something that, God, I'd never put a name to it before. And this is actually not in the book. It's we're going to talk about your membership and your website and all that stuff, but it was a freebie on the freebie section. Morning anxiety. You've got this morning anxiety PDF. And I didn't know that it was like something that was really common either, because I definitely wake up and I'm really lucky that I moved at the start of the year to literally the beaches outside where I live. So my sort of way of coping with it, because I've talked before in previous episodes of the podcast about when my anxiety is disturbing me, I feel like I need to get it out. And for me, I have to walk. My mum calls it walking off my demons, because sometimes I can be gone for hours, but not obviously on work days. But yeah, I didn't know that morning anxiety was a thing that loads of people got. It was really common. And yeah, that's how I try to manage mine, is like, right, get out of the house. And if I haven't been out the house, I know. I'm like, okay, get out of the house. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to focus, you know?
Anxiety is one of my specialties, because it's something that I've had to manage. So you'll see on my course, I have like a health anxiety course, intrusive thoughts, morning anxiety, like all these different sort of anxiety specific things. And it's such a big one for people. And I have a morning anxiety kit, like a little book that you go through for your mornings with all of the tools that lead you through, because it's super common. It's just a time where our cortisol is really high. When we're already anxious people, it spikes it. And then we tend to get in these really negative loops of scanning for the anxiety and doing things that actually perpetuate it without realizing. So you're so alone at all.
So I found myself as well, like I'll wake up like, you know, like I'm waking up to danger. And then I suppose, maybe my mind then is trying to like find some, and that's where it might go to like negative thinking patterns or the inner critic. Yeah, I just didn't know that was a thing, because obviously we know things about like health anxiety, general anxiety, panic attacks, but I'd never heard of the term morning anxiety before. So well, let's talk about how we can sort of point to all of your stuff, because I mean, is it 8 books you've written and illustrated as well? Because the pictures are awesome. So, I don't know how you've got time to do all of this, though, Bex, but
I'm not quite sure either, but it's happened.
So it's journeytowellness.online is where, I mean, that's kind of like the hub, isn't it? Where you've got your membership, which I believe opens up again in May.
Yes. We open in May. If your listeners are really keen to join beforehand, they can message me and I can send them a private link to join. So there's membership, but everyone can also just attend things like we have monthly classes. We have somatic release classes for nervous system regulation and emotional processing on different themes every month. And we have workshops every month. Wow. So there's one, the ones that are coming up are on pain and anxiety reprocessing and parts work. And we have all sorts of beautiful things.
Time zone difference, because you're in New Zealand and we're in the UK. I mean, we've got listeners everywhere, but like, you know, if there any of these live classes are not in a sort of convenient time, can we catch them on demand, or is it more about being interactive?
No, so they all get replays and lifetime access. I do them first thing, like, you know, in my mornings, which is usually in the evening in America, like sort of early evening, and it's probably usually around maybe 8 o'clock UK time often.
Okay. So that's probably a good
many time times people make it. Yeah. Which is cool. But the replays are all there. Our membership has a huge, huge library section that matches every emotion and is full of PDF workbooks, audio guided meditations, videos and things. So our members actually have a massive sort of on demand resources.
Okay.
As well. Awesome. So that's super handy.
So do you sort of sign up for like a year, or can you do like a month by month thing, or how does it work?
Yeah, just monthly, which is about 49 New Zealand, which is $30 US. I'm not 100% sure on the pounds of that, but it's super, super affordable, like ridiculously affordable. You get every single course, the library, you get 3 events every month. Yeah, so it's a beautiful place, and we have a community hub, so people talk and offer advice, and I'm always in there, and so it's such a gorgeous place to be.
Yeah, that sounds great. And you know, we pay more for a gym membership, right? And we should do it for our brain as well.
My gym membership is far more expensive and I use it far less.
Yeah, right. And Instagram, of course, because you've got nearly half a million followers. So you've got
Yes.
some community that you've built up there. So that's Instagram.com/journey_to_wellness_.
All of the underscores. Yep.
All of the underscores. And then I've seen that you've got this nervous system reset course, which I guess could people sign up for that as a little sort of taste of your membership, or is it part of the membership?
That would be a great thing to do. So there's a freebies page on my website, and there's that free course, and there's a bunch of free downloads, and there's also I often share free somatic practices, and every time the membership opens, I offer a free release class for people to come and experience it. So if people are on the mailing list and if they just explore the website, they usually can find quite a few goodies, and Instagram's full of free things as well.
Cool. And we'll put everything in the show notes as well. Amazing. Bex, I can't let you go until we wrap up the interview with the Happier Life Project's last five in five. These are five quick fire questions that we ask every guest to close the episode. Okay. When and where are you at your happiest?
I have just recently bought a camper van, and when I go and back this camper van up at the beach and I open up at this view, and my dog and my daughter and my husband, if he's around, and we sit in the camper van, it's lush. That's my happy spot.
Oh, well, that sounds like a fabulous happy spot. What's your favorite thing to do that nourishes your mental health?
I know this is probably going to sound a bit sad, but I just like being on my own and just having a recharge without anyone else's energy. If I can get a moment of that at least once a week, just to be by myself in stillness and reading and, you know, body work, whatever it is, in a yoga class, that's my nourishment.
What piece of advice do you now know that you wished somebody would have told you earlier that would have made you a happier person?
Oh my gosh, that's such an amazing question. One thing that that I love is just reminding myself we're always just doing the best we can at the time with what we know. If you can do nothing else other than come back to yourself with a relationship of compassion, it can change everything. Just being compassionate and curious with yourself.
What is the most important one thing that needs to change to make the world a happier place?
Oh my goodness, that's a big question. I think, you know what, if we could do the compassion piece again, if we could just hold space for less judgment of self, but of others as well, and just kind of rather than imprinting our views onto everything, just holding space that people are doing the best they can as well, often with what they know, or just, yeah, holding a little bit of, I like saying, what's my most generous interpretation of the situation or this person.
And finally, what is a simple actionable step that we can take when it comes to finding calm in the chaos that will help us on our journey to building a happier life?
Ask yourself pretty much the same question. So I ask myself this: what is just one thing I could do in this moment that would be helpful, nourishing, kind, loving? What is just one thing I could do? Just one simple thing. So we just take the overwhelm out of it and take it one day at a time.
And if you need some inspiration, then 101 Ways to Find Calm would be a great resource.
But there's a few ways in there.
Thank you so much for your time. And I'm conscious that we have run over, so I appreciate that you've been very generous today. Yeah, and like I said, we'll put all the info in our show notes as well, so that people can find you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. The questions were incredible, and it was such a wonderful chat with you. So thank you for your time.
Oh, I appreciate that. Hi, it's Gabby back with you. Thanks again to Rebecca Baller, and thank you to you for listening to this episode of the Happier Life Project. As I mentioned at the start of the podcast, we are going to take a little break now, but we will be back with plenty more content in the near future. So if you aren't already following us on social media, we're at My Possible Self, and that's where you can keep on top of all of our news. One more thing, and that's the important housekeeping before we sign off. If you are suffering with your mental health,
there is a crisis button on the My Possible Self app, which will signpost you to the correct information for immediate expert advice. Those of you who are listening on one of the podcast platforms, the My Possible Self app is completely free to download, so you don't need to worry about it costing you anything. If you are in crisis or you think you may have an emergency, please call your doctor or the emergency services immediately. The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the interviewer, which is me, and the interviewees. The content of this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a substitute for professional or medical advice. The Priory Healthcare are not involved in the production or content of this podcast. If you found this or any of our episodes helpful, please do share with your friends and loved ones, especially those who might be struggling with their mental health and could do with some extra support. And if you are listening on one of the podcast platforms, please do subscribe and leave a review if you haven't done already, because it helps others in need to find us too. Please do take care, and I'll see you on the next one. Bye for now.